today is Rudy's birthday, he would have been 82, which is sort of hard to fathom. Rudy had such an extraordinary presence at the age of 45 when he died. He was such a dynamic, living entity. It's impossible to think of him as ever having become frail. And I suspect if he was still with us physically, no matter what was happening to his body, there would be no sense of frailty about him at all. If there was a single word for me that defined Rudy, it was work. The word work. Because he really understood how complicated, obstructed, resistant, and closed down most people are. And it's usually when you're really, really closed down and really obstructed that something in you goes, help me. And you start to want something to change it, because being shut down and being obstructed and all of those forces is so unpleasant. It's such a horrible way to go through life. And a lot of those people found their way, me being one of them, to Rudy. If somebody at that moment in time had told me, you are the very thing you're looking for, you are perfect as you are, there's nothing to do, I would have slugged them, because I couldn't believe that on any level. I was just the opposite. I was not the being I wanted to be. I was not the free and enlightened and awakened entity that I had read was possible, that I even had sometimes on rare occasions experienced. And Rudy got that. He truly got that. That the difference between our aspirations spiritually and who we are is for many people bigger than we are able to accept. That yes, awakening and realization can happen like that. Sometimes they do. But if that were to take place in a body and mind that most people inhabit, it would be a useless experience. You would have this extraordinary awakening, and then 2 minutes later, all the habitual patterns of life would take over. And you would be back pretty much to where you started. The patterns of our identity are so deep, are so ingrained, that digging out of them is almost impossible. In truth, without grace, it probably would be impossible. Because we are so karmically bound by our past behaviors, by our past identities, by what our parents told us we were, our teachers, our friends, the world around us. It creates us in a way. It creates a self that is almost impossible to get rid of. And most people lug around this noisy, angry mind. Sometimes we do things like good deeds that make us feel better about ourselves. Some days we're very loving and we feel like, oh, you know, if I could be like this all the time. Some people feel some days that you will be like that all the time, and then even for a week or so you are, and you get a taste of what it could be like to be the best version of yourself. And then you slip back, as we all do, into the old patterns and habits and identities. Rudy got that. He truly got that. And he said, you got to work your way out of that situation. You have to fight your way out of that situation, and you have to do everything in your power. Why? Well, because the life that's possible for you is so much sweeter, richer, and more beautiful than anything you may be living. And that he knew that. And we know that. And we're all caught up in the worst version, or not the worst necessarily, but not a lesser version of a life that we could live if we knew more about the truth of ourself. We could all have this extraordinary clarity of being and a sense of a joyous, giving, open, loving, amazed, and wondrous life. And how many of us live that? So Rudy looked at it and said, wow, there's all of this resistance to that. Why would that be? Why would you be resistant to having a good life, a happy life, a joyous life? Why would you not want to open your heart and love people? Why would you not want to accept yourself? What are the forces that keep you entrenched in this very heavy, unpleasant, addled kind of existence? Well, he realized, as did anybody who practices and teaches meditation, that it's your mind that does this. This crazy mind that we have that paints this picture of us that is reinforced over and over and over. And how do we get past this mind that is so endlessly insistent on painting a negative picture of us, or a self-aggrandizing, overly wonderful picture of us, but something that's not real? How do we get past that? Well, he said you have to want to get past it, you have to wish to get past it, and you have to need to get past it. And when those forces are at play, you begin to go into the place of deepest asking. Now, where is your place of deepest asking? Well, for many people, it's just in their head. They go, this isn't right. This doesn't make sense. I want to get out of this. I don't like this place I'm in. It's about a quarter of an inch deep, but it's there. And you go, I don't think I'm in a good place. I got to do something about it. And then you go make yourself a piece of toast and drink some orange juice, and you forget about it. Some people, the pain is deeper than that. And they really go into their heart, and they really say, I can't bear this. I can't bear how I'm feeling. It's too difficult, painful. Life is painful. What can I do about this? I need help. And some people at that place in time may actually conceptualize going to get help somewhere. But then, you know, take out the ice cream out of the refrigerator, you know, you put a little hot fudge, and you're fine, and you forget it. And then sometimes you get to the place where it is no longer something you want or you wish for. You need to do something. You need to change your life. You need to change your behaviors. You need to change your identity. You need to change how you think about you. And how do you do that? How do you do that? Well, when you get to that really deep place, you will take action. Now, when you take action based on what's available, what you know of. So maybe you go to a shrink. Maybe you get medical help. Maybe you decide you want to try meditation. But you know you need to do something to change you. And that moment is when life kicks in and the possibility of real transformation exists. At that moment, change can occur. And then you have to find somebody who will make you accountable for change and who will offer you on a daily basis, a weekly basis, whatever it takes, the opportunity and the inspiration to make that effort. to be the person you want to become, to figure that out and to do it. And Rudy went in there in a way that I've never seen another person do and said, you can do this and you have to do it. Take a breath into your heart, ask for help to surrender. Then let out a little of it and bring it into your navel chakra, into your gut, and ask for help to surrender. You begin this extraordinary kind of reprogramming yourself to want to change and grow. And then when you have a teacher like Rudy, he adds this other element to it, which is he loves you for no reason other than the fact that you exist. He just loves you. And that love poured through with this wish that you started to cultivate, and something took place inside you. You started to change. You started to grow. Every one of us, I could look, when I was in Rudy's classes, I would watch these people. You would walk in into a classroom and there was halos, glow. There was a beauty in everybody around you. And you went, I'm in heaven. I'm with angels. I am with the most beautiful, wonderful people imaginable. And then none of them started out that way. We all started out like I did, this corroded kind of little dwarfy character that needed enormous help. And Rudy just went and said, here's help. Here it is. Do this, take this love, open to it, and you will change and you will transform and you will grow. And I remember hugging Rudy one day, and I was like melting with love. And he said, that's it, Bruce. That's it. It's what you feel for your mother when you're 4 years old. That's what love is. And that's what I was feeling for him. He was hardly my mother, but he was like my new parent. He had given me new life, new energy, new possibility, and enough to sustain me for all of the years that have gone on since he died. That energy has been a great gift. It has shown me enormous possibility in my spiritual work. My spiritual work has grown to the point where the effort involved in working to change has altered for me. It's a simpler effort. I don't have to dig and demand and yell and scream. I just have to say, please help me. Or, yes. Or more importantly, what's really happened for me in my work is that this mind that I have been embattled with has gotten quieter and quieter. Not all the time, but certainly when I sit to meditate, my mind becomes what I would call like a occasional mosquito or a fly. It kind of buzzes up and you just go like that. Just flick it away. And it goes away. And sometimes it goes away for the rest of the class. Sometimes it comes back like a mosquito, you know. And you have to do that. But whatever you have to do, the mind is very small and controllable. It's not something like a bull charging at you in a meadow. That's a whole other thing. Sometimes your mind is that big, that strong, that you have to run and get out of the way because it's going to do damage. And the mind does, as you all know, do damage. But the great thing of my own practice has been learning to let go of the mind and discovering what's left. And I talk about this week after week, but it's an extraordinary practice because if you can sit down and you've worked on your mind, you've worked on your psyche, and you have done much of the work that Rudy required, what happens is there's a part of you that is in observation of the noise of the mind. But it's not engaged in it. It doesn't mean that the mind has gone anywhere. It just means you're not feeding it. You're not paying attention to every little thing that it throws at you. You're going, doesn't matter. Or you're doing the fly, you're flicking it off. Doesn't matter. And you get to this very quiet place. And what takes place is really interesting. Because you begin to see how much the mind defines everything. And if you were to take it away for a little bit, if I were to ask you right now, in this class, where are you? Where are you right now? The mind would kick in, and it would create a sense of, rather quickly, the universe. the solar system, the planet. Just like that Google map, it would spin around until you got to upstate New York. It would zero in on this farmhouse up in the country, and up the stairs and into this room, and you would suddenly have a picture of yourself. This is where you are. This is where you are. And I would say, let go of the mind, let go of the Google map, let go of the whole history thing that you've learned that says we're in a universe that is, you know, located, you know, without time and space, but there is a place in it called our solar system. Gone. All of that goes. Mind is defining everything. So you take that away, where are you? Take away even the ride here. Take away the name, you know, upstate New York, Rhinebeck, Clinton Hollow. Take away all that stuff. Where are you? You're here, but without your mind filling in, there's nothing else. There's nowhere else. You're just here. And that's absolutely real to you. All the other stuff has to be filled in, but this doesn't have to be filled in because you're here. If you can get rid of where you're going when you leave here, the idea that you've got things to do, just let go of that. You're really here. Take the mind out of the equation, and all you know, in a sense, is that you're here sitting in a body. That your body's here. But how do you know your body's here? Really? Well, because you feel it. Right? You're conscious of having a body or being in a body in a room. Well, how are you conscious of that? Because you are sensing it. You're feeling. What are you feeling, really? You're feeling your butt sitting on either a soft cushion or a hard floor. You're feeling whatever tensions you may have. Your back hurts a little. You're identifying these sensations with a body. You look down at your body and you see, okay, I've got some pants or slacks or skirt, or I got an orange shirt. Now you have this sense of a physical thing that's being fed back to you through your mind, really. But when you sit and meditate, you let that go. So really all you are, really, is sensations of a body. Your sensations that is a head, because something is reaffirming that's a head. And this is my hands, this is the body. And then you just relax the mind enough to stop identifying sensations as anything but sensations. And what are you? Who are you? Where are you? You're right there. You're still right there. How come? What is it? And if you can really quiet the mind, you feel spacious. You kind of feel nothing, but it's very present nothing. Sometimes these emotions rise up into it that are really sweet or really not sweet. But you just go, huh. Something is rising up and falling away. In what? In nothing. In space. There's not even a sense of space. There's just a sense of presence. Oh. Huh. It gets really quiet. Huh. There's no you. There's just presence. And that's truth. That's all you know. That is all you know. It goes deeper than that. But that's as far as most people can go on their own. Then grace happens. And grace puts it in context. But you don't have to go there. All you have to do is be here now. Be present. Be still. Be at peace. Be one. Be whole. Be empty. Be nothing. And there you are. and it's characterless on some level, but it's a complete release of everything. Don't look for it to be this or to be that. Don't ask for anything to come. Stuff will come. Stuff will arise. You will find when you open your eyes, when you stand up, when the life starts to surge back at you again, which it's going to do very shortly, everything starts to happen again. You're back. You're back in all of this. It comes. It arises. It arises as, oh, it's a room full of people. Oh, there's Bruce sitting in his orange shirt. Oh, there's Rudy in his picture right next to Bruce. Oh, we're in this house. We're in Rhinebeck. The whole thing comes back. It's supposed to come back. And you go, oh, wow. And you can be in this whole thing, or if you want, you can just go and be completely still. At some point, you can be completely still when all this stuff is going on. And you can just deeply open to this stuff, and you will realize it's happening. This stuff is happening. The next moment is happening. It's programmed. You know, your car is waiting for you. There are places to go and things to do. It's waiting for you. You may think you're doing it, you're engaging it. It's really just happening. And you're on the ride. You, this still point, has this huge world of stuff going on in it. Enjoy the ride. Enjoy the ride. But come back as often as you can to the still point, to the stillness within you, because that's the only true thing there is. Everything else is incredibly beautiful and terrible. All the stuff, yin and yang, all the drama, all the coloration, everything that goes on is amazing, and boy, does it get your attention. But your attention is given to it or attracted to it, and you can go there or you can just be still. You have enormous control. And Rudy's whole goal in creating the work was to give you that capacity. Let go of the world if you want, or engage it if you want. Be completely in it, or completely free of it, or both at the same time. This is all your power, it's all your capacity, it is all your gift, if you want it. If you choose not to do this, and many of you do choose that, the universe doesn't care. It truly doesn't care. You can choose whatever you want. You can be totally caught up in the drama and the wonderfulness and awfulness of life, or you can just be, that's really the sentence, or you can just be. I couldn't be talking to you about this if it wasn't for Rudy. I wouldn't be sitting here knowing anything if it wasn't for Rudy. And what it is I know, honestly, is not anything I know. I know I sit here and I talk to you, and I know these words are coming out, and I know there's a voice speaking to you, and I know that the words have a certain sense to them. And I think that sense has impact, but I'm pretty much nothing to do with it. It's just coming out. If you ask me an hour later what I was talking about today, I will not be able to tell you. Not that I'm channeling it or anything. It is alive in itself. It is its own voice. In truth, it can speak with wisdom, or it can just yell and scream at you with stupidity. It's the same voice. It's the same thing. It's just, how much can you surrender and let it be? And when you truly let it be, it will teach you everything. And it's a gift. We're all here because there's a gift. Everyone in this room has been given the gift that required you, as you know, to make a big effort to get over to get it. But you've gotten here. Take the gift. Take the gift. sit still, do the work, break down your resistance, break down your anger, break down your wanting to run away from pain, break down all that stuff, sit in it, and find the space where you are, where you always are, which is where you are right this second. Any questions?
When you say the universe doesn't care, however true that may be, the guru principle through you, through Rudy, I mean, there's an element of the universe that very much cares. So, how does that work?
I think it knows itself that in time it's designed that every being, through their own effort and lack of effort, through their own intelligence and lack of intelligence, will stumble upon or will be directed to this.
So it's biding its time in a way.
Why not? It's got eternity. Yeah. If it was in a rush, we'd all be enlightened.
It's enjoying the play.
Well, that is the idea, that it is the play. And it creates this play because, again, it has infinite time to play. What is time? It's the way the infinite keeps itself engaged. It can or not.
Last time I was in class, I asked you about relationship that we might have to George Bush, given that if he is the same as me, if I am the same as him, etc. And again, it comes up in a similar way of how does being a social and I'm going to use the word political, but I don't want to define it, but with that part of your heart going, how does that relate to everything that we're doing here?
In the drama of the world, it's a big, exciting show, and it engages us in remarkable ways. Everyone is engaged differently, but we are engaged by it. This past week, the past 2 weeks have been, for people of similar ilk, you and I, unbelievably unbearable.
Yeah.
Unbearable. The world has been, Haiti has been something that has been almost impossible for my nervous system to handle. I cannot watch it on television. I cannot read about it in the paper. The Supreme Court decision, I mean, we can go on and on and on, you know, the election in Massachusetts, you know, for those of us of whatever you want to call it, progressive ilk, this has been horrendous, period. There are people who've been cheering while this is going on because it's exactly what they hope for, and it will finally bring down the forces of government that are creating all the problems. And you and I might say, well, that's not intelligent. It's kind of, there's an ignorance in that. But who knows that we're right? There's a lot of forces at work in the world, and we can engage them as we want, or we can, once in a while, step back and just find that center that goes. It's an old idea. God's in his heaven and all's right with the world. I mean, it's hard to believe that sometimes when you look at all this stuff. But it's still here. It's still going on. It goes through horrible upheavals, and then it goes through periods of great beauty. The world is always in polarities. It's going yin and yang, and it will do that forever. It's meant to do that. So those of us who have that incredible desire to make it a perfect utopian space are going to be very disappointed at some point because it doesn't work that way. And now the world seems to be going faster, at least to those people who have been around long enough. It seems to have been speeding up, and it's the truth of our expectations has been challenged continually by the world at this point. Nobody knows what's next. Literally, at this point, nobody knows what's next. It used to be we could pretend that if I did this when I was, my father did this and my grandfather did this, then I would do that. There was a line of projection of what life would be like. It doesn't happen anymore. Life has changed so much. We're all in a place of complete unknowing, And the Buddhist would say, finally, you realize you don't know anything, and nobody ever has, and nobody ever will. It's what it is. It's just what it is. We can engage that drama, which you have done, which I did for the last 10 days, or disengage by turning off the television and not reading the front page of the paper and going to the entertainment section and whatever. You find a way to live through the stuff that's going on, or you engage it in some way. No, you could not probably fly down to Haiti, but you could send money to Haiti, and I suspect, I mean, I don't know you, but what you did, but I sent money immediately to Haiti, and I did all sorts of stuff that I could do because it felt right. I don't know if it actually gets to Haiti. I don't know what it really does, but it felt right. And you engage the world as best you can. I looked at a little thing on CNN News, a poll of how many people sent money to Haiti. It was really shocking. It was like 40-something percent did, and 50-something percent did not. And I went, how could people not engage this situation? And I realized I'm not in the majority. There are a lot of people out there who don't care. Just don't care. I went, it's not the world I want to live in, but it is the world that is around us, and it has always been the world on some level. Most people's real care and real concern is me. Period. Me. My. Mine. That's what matters. And you can be as generous as you want with others if me, mine, mine is taken care of. But if it's not, that's what it goes to. And we are engineered that way as people. So this spiritual unfolding that's taking place is completely unnatural on some level, and yet at the deepest level, it is totally natural. So you have to put it in perspective. And if you can put it in perspective, you can ride it out. But I will tell you, atmospherically, try to understand this, the atmosphere around us is now very charged. And it's very difficult, and everyone is suffering. This is a time of real suffering going on around us. What can you do in a time like that? One, disengage from suffering as best you can, and turn that disengagement, which turns into openness and love, and put it back into that space. Bring it to everyone you can bring it to. Bring it to everyone you know. Be available. Be empathetic. Listen. Absorb. Don't let it twist you up inside. Just let them pour their stuff out. Let them empty out. Hug. Offer love. Don't do too much guidance because people don't want it. But just try to be available to other people. That's the spiritual response to a period like this. And it's a great thing to be able to give. And we need people who are able to do that. Even to yourself. Because there are days when you'll wake up and you'll say, I can't handle this. Because you're a sensitive person, and I suspect there is some nervous system response to the magnitude of what's happening. Allow yourself to forgive yourself for that, because it's natural. And the world's suffering is really not your suffering, but it is. It's a collective. We're a collective. And we all experience everything. So understand that. Make peace with that. Be gentle. Be kind. Rudy would say, go out and get a milkshake. And be... enjoy your life as best you can.
And that can include work that has those principles behind it.
Oh, absolutely. No, if Rudy said, if you want to be a social worker, if you want to engage the world, then do it with everything in you.
Yeah.
Not as a means of getting rid of guilt or anything like that. It's because you believe in this. It's the positive gesture rather than the negative gesture. You're not running from something, you're moving towards something. Utilize that well. Have we done this? Okay, we're going to go downstairs right afterward. And Michael baked a great cheesecake for Rudy.
I didn't bake.
Oh,
he decorated it.
Michael found a great cheesecake, which is beautifully decorated. And we're going to go downstairs as soon as we leave here, before we have brunch. And we just, and this is what we do in L.A., we'll gather around, we'll sing happy birthday to Rudy, we'll blow out a candle, and we'll cut the cake, and then you can have it as dessert. But I just wanted to, in some way, acknowledge again today the gratitude I feel for Rudy's birth in my life and whatever it's brought to all of you. So thank you very much for coming.